Hi, I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Jonathan.
Sobriety date is June 30th, 2013. My sponsor's name is Nye, and I am a member of the Atlantic Group, reworking, and I'm on step four. Little general beforehand, if there's anything you can relate to the emotions and feelings I had, not necessarily the places my alcoholism put me in. Because that's one thing that I've been able to time and time again, no matter what socioeconomic status or gender role you may identify with, I've always been able to identify with someone's feelings and emotions. If this is your first time at a meeting, welcome. If you really need this meeting, welcome. I do too. I think we all do. I get right into it. I looking back, it's kind of funny because I can see my alcoholic tendencies manifest themselves in my life as early as 4 and 5. When I'm 4 years old, I remember Pokemon cards were the thing. My mother would go grocery shopping on Saturday or Friday. And what that meant was that my parents gave me everything that I wanted. I was the youngest of three, and I just like batted my eyelashes and I had anything I wanted. So that meant each week I would get a deck of Pokemon cards, but that, for whatever reason, one time when I was in the grocery store with my mother, I took a deck, went into the restroom, opened the deck, and got the sense of release, at such a young age. Cause I had a therapist when I was three. I was a kid with a nervous disposition, definitely. And I never fit in anywhere. When I open that deck and double the cards, I come up to school on Monday because that social applause that I get is so gratifying that, by Wednesday I'm obsessing over going to the grocery store again with my mother because I need it. I need someone to tell me oh, that Blastoise that I stole was amazing. I need that rush that I get when I open the deck and I throw the garbage, any remnants of possibly getting caught for this at 4 years old into the toilet and I flush it. That gives me a sense of ease and comfort. I see it now. I see it so clearly. I definitely had these tendencies at such an early age. Whether it be environmentally or genetically predisposed, I don't know. But I just know that as early as 4 and 3, I can see it. Nobody in my direct family is an alcoholic. Some could definitely benefit, I assume, but none of them are proclaimed alcoholics. I moved away. I was born in Long Island, moved to Florida when I was 5, parents stayed together until I was 11, I remember having my first blackout when I was 12. I was raised Catholic, and the thing was, once again, enter social applause. My cousins were back from their deployments, and I was actually invited finally to hang out with them, and that was I had arrived. Definitely, I was part of, of it at last, life was here. And I remember just waking up at 4 a.m. with my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother surrounding me as I'm vomiting profusely because, that sense of ease and comfort that I had, that I could relax and take a breath it was a boost, I think is what it was called. When I took my first sip, I don't remember anything past the first, because when I had the first sip, I chugged the rest of it, and I'm sure I had more because I blacked out. The thing was, I say I was raised Catholic because a week after that, a little less than a week after that, my eldest brother passed away, and I definitely was raised to believe that my conception of a God was a punishing God. So I thought I was gluttonous, I decided to not listen and obey my parents, therefore God was directly punishing me. That was enough to not let me drink for a couple years, I think. And, alcoholic tendencies, I'm able to escape in academics. I went to a great high school, but sure enough, I end up seeing that my friends are going to school, yet, having these like after school parties and everything. Basically, like they had an allure for me. They were maintaining a level of academic integrity, yet still drinking and doing things that I was not a part of. I was in the debate club, I was in the math academic games, I was in the book club, et cetera, fill in any nerdy thing there. Finally, I remember I ended up having a hit when I was like 16. I had my car at the time, and the first thing, like maybe like no more than 10 minutes after smoking, I asked my friend to get his friend to ride his bike, his dealer, to ride his bike back up the parking garage which we were in, and I gave him my allowance for the week, and I told him that I want that. You know, that's how I chased it when I had, like, nothing else. Because, like, that feeling, once again, like, all the clamors that the world had filled in me, I just, I wanted to let go. I didn't want I wanted to check out. And, you know, that's pretty much anything, you know. Alcohol becomes ABCs, you know. Alcohol becomes anything for me, really. It never did anything good for me, but I could never see that. Because by the time I was 20, I had been kicked out of 2 detoxes, was supposed to be in rehab, been sent to the psych ward like 6 times, been hospitalized countless times because of physical reasons directly related to alcohol and drugs, and I had been in the back of a cop car like 7 times. And yet, for whatever reason, because of the alcoholic mind, I could not see that every time any one of those things occurred, I was under the influence. You know, while I may not have been under the influence every time, I may not have been under the influence and caused one of those things to happen, every time one of those things did happen, I was under the influence, and I could not see that. Bill, our founder, co-founder of AA, likes to call it like the curtain that divides me from reality, from what's actually happening. And, finally, I'm 20, I'm on probation, and that's not enough to stop me either, but I had a friend that, like, planted the seed, and she had, this is why, I don't know if either of you guys know what reaching out, it's a passage that's read, you know, anytime anyone reaches out for the hand of AA, I always want to be there, basically, So my friend, like, we went to middle school together, we went to high school, messed up college together, and, at the end of her run, she was, like, living in my walk-in closet, and her parents were not having her, and she ends up going, she ends up deciding, like, the third time of them kicking her out to go to a long-term treatment, and she gets out and has 4 months, and 12 steps me. I don't know if she was intending to, but like it was just that like she asked questions about me without like trying to put in anything about herself. She didn't like sneak away because we were together for about 3 hours that day, and she didn't sneak away to like smoke or take a drink or anything. And she was like genuinely happy. And, I would love to say I got sober right there. No, it took like 8 more months, but even though every meeting that she took me to, I was not sober, she never told me I could not go to a meeting with her. She left the door open as well as she could. And she, thank God for her. She's got like 5 years now, by the way. So she's doing great. Like I said, like finally, things got worse. And, for whatever reason, I had like this moment of clarity that everything that had been happening, like the fact that I could not even finish 2 semesters consecutively of a community college, that was an issue. The fact that all I had to do was literally show up to these classes. They're classes I had taken in high school, and if I just shown up, taken the test, I would ace them. And I couldn't do that. The fact that I had kept being kicked out of my mom's house, my dad's house, forcibly making myself homeless because I didn't want to not smoke inside of their house, or I didn't want to not drink and drive. Those are things that alcohol and alcoholism did to me. And finally, I was able to see the reality, the fact that, like, alcohol was not doing for me what it used to be able to do, which, like, for a long time, you know, relieving that restlessness, that irritability and discontention was great, because that's probably what kept me from, like, you know, committing the great sacrifice, suicide, because I was so miserable with myself. And had alcohol not been there as a temporary solution, I probably would have killed myself. And, you know, once it stopped working, I could only see that it was still doing for me, or believe that it was still doing for me, and I could not see that what it was doing to me was ending me up in jail, was ending me up in courts, ending me up, like, in my car, living there for like a day or two until my parents finally succumbed to the desire of like having their baby back in their house. And I, you know, on June 30th of 2013, I offered myself up and just like, I got sober. I'm not like a cookie cutter sobriety story, because like for the first 8 months, I don't have a sponsor. I'm going to meetings maybe like twice a week, but the one thing that my first sponsor likes to tell me is that I definitely had some sort of a formula that is in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was attending Anglo-Saxon church. I was doing service for that church on Sundays, and I was going to the beach 3 times a week to meditate. And one of those nights was like, it was March, cause that's, it was like March 9th of 2014. I was on the beach that night, and I was set to early term my probation, and I knew, you know, another like moment of clarity. Like I knew that if I had continued doing what I was doing, i.e. not the program, as it's outlined, getting a sponsor, doing this 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, then eventually, you know, church wouldn't do for me anymore what it was doing. You know, for me, that doesn't work. So, you know, sure enough, the next day, God reveals himself to me, and that same friend invites me to a meeting all the way in West Boca Raton. Like, really, if I was staying in Juneau Beach at the time, and really far, so it's like a 40-minute commute. It's like, you know, if you're not really serious about the program, if someone tells you to go to a meeting in the Bronx, you're not going to go, basically. So I went, and I met my sponsor there, and my first sponsor. And, you know, if anyone... real quick question. How many people here do have a sponsor? Great. Great. And to those that don't, I'm not knocking you. It was nerve-wracking for me. He was celebrating 11 years of sobriety at the time. And what happens in Florida is people like have celebrants. Someone recognizes somebody else with a medallion, and that's the celebrant. And everyone usually goes up to them and cheers for them. Hoorah. And like, I was hoping I could just like hide away, cause like I knew that this was definitely the moment that I was there for. You know, I didn't just travel 40 minutes for no reason. And eventually, like, it's just me, him, and my friend and her friend, and like they like slowly walk away, cause she knew I needed a sponsor. And I look him in the eye, and I'm just like, hey, do you want to be my sponsor? And he's like, sure. Then jokingly, he's like, yeah, but you're not going to call. And I'm like, okay, that fierce determination to win came back. Yeah, you know, another great example of these 12 steps. You know, he was a corporate lawyer in Sacramento, and he came to Florida. He retired early. On a 9-step amends he was making to his mother and father. They were growing old, and they needed somebody to care for them, and he wasn't going to put them in assisted living. So as a part of his living amends to them, he retired early and gave up everything that he knew to care for them. You know, like another like perfect example. So naturally what that meant was that he had given me all the time in the world, that anytime I had called him and I was done with my reading, he was willing and ready to meet up and do step work. So what that looked like was I would call him like 30 minutes before I planned on downloading the audio. I played the audio on the drive because he was living in Boca as well. And, you know, I would tell him, I'm like, hey, I'm done reading. And I would, you know, drive and listen to the audio. I was doing it. I would, by the time I got there, like if there was like one chapter that was like specifically long, I had to like fast forward like to 1.5 times speed. But like, I went around like Murakami Museum. I was like, okay, I'm just, you know, running into traffic. You know, that's essentially how I got through the steps. The only reason I did finish my fourth step was because because my car had broken down when I was, like, a third way through. And I had to, my father wasn't picking me up at the Kia dealership, so I had to leave my car there. And it was either, like, wait 5 hours and, like, twiddle my thumbs, or, you know, wait 5 hours and do my fourth step. And that's what I did. So thank God for a broken car. And, you know, right when I was done with that, I went straight to him. You know, he, like I said, he'd given me all the time in the world. And little did I know, he needed me to stay sober. And, you know, I left, you know, I'll be honest, like, my first fourth step, I was maybe, like, 80% honest. Like, that was the most honest I could be, and that's the most honest I had been with one person. You know, all of these stories consolidated into one person. This was the most I could do, and it was more than enough. Because when I left that fifth step with him, when I left, I didn't feel the need to compare and despair. I didn't feel the need to be like, oh, I'm better than you or less than you. I didn't, you know, feel the need to say that I was, like, richer or poorer. I didn't feel the need to say I was more intelligent or less intelligent. I just felt like I was here for a reason. I belonged, and I was not a mistake. And, you know, for me, that was, like, a lot because, like, to a familial level, I could not before, like, relate. I was the chunky kid who didn't have a middle name in my entire family. I didn't have my, like, it's a thing my mom, like, saved our belly buttons. It's cute. You know, I just was the only one who pretty much, like, made it through high school without any issues, graduated early. Like, the, you know, I couldn't relate at all. When I was 9, I, like, went into my mother's closet, and I was looking for adoption paperwork because at that simple institution of a family, I could not relate. I did not believe I was actually related to them. And, you know, leaving, you know, like, 12 years after that, 13 years after that, leaving and being able to look at the world, like the big book says, like, through a whole new pair of glasses, I felt comfortable. And I still do feel comfortable, you know. And it's not to say, like, sometimes it doesn't come back and I'm like, oh, you know, I wish I could. Or, like, it's not like I don't covet other things. But, you know, for the most part, I am comfortable right where I'm at today. You know, I do a 6 and 7. I did it out of a book called Drop the Rock. What's the time on? 3 minutes. Oh, perfect. Great. Drop the Rock. Great book. Read it. It definitely got me familiar with my character deficiencies, in which, you know, it likes to relate it to the 7 deadly sins and how I can be on either end of the spectrum. And, you know, what I really need in my life is balance. You know, I do an 8 and 9, you know, basically I'm able to make amends for the harms I had done, you know, and you know, like, what I had come to realize in my 9th, when I was making these amends, was that, like, in writing them out, it's not that I had just, like, affected, my mother. You know, the fact is, like, when I was out there doing the things I was doing selfishly, I was affecting my mother's mother because she was calling her at 12 a.m. when she didn't know where I was, worried, sick. You know, I was affecting my brother because he, you know, was so worried for my mom. You know, she was, like, graying her hair out. Like, you know, she was, like, basically dying, worried, sick about me. And all I could see, you know, was, like, well, I'm me. You know, I was able to make right those wrongs. I'm able to make right those wrongs. You know, and then I'm doing a 10th, 11th, and 12th step. You know, my 10th step is basically steps 4 through 9 all the time. It's outlined in page 84 and 85. My 11th step, which is my prayer and meditation, keeping that conscious contact with God open. Much like any relationship that I have, if I'm only talking, I'm not really, it's not a relationship, I'm just stealing from that, and I'm able to listen for direction and guidance through my meditation. And, you know, I'm not, like, floating on a rock or anything. It's just, like, I go to meetings sometimes with, like, an open heart and open ears. You know, I read pages 84 through 88, like, 20% of the time when I'm being good. And I ask for direction. I ask for the next thought process, that I be guided in my day-to-day life, and that I pack into the stream of life as positively as he would have me. You know, then I do a 12-step, which is basically, you know, doing service. You know, much like you know, that the negatives I had when I was out there, the negative implications. You know, my 12-step is, like, equal but opposite. So in that, like, every time I help another alcoholic or addict, I'm actually able to like have a ripple effect of like, you know, they have a fellowship grow up amongst them. You know, if I'm sponsoring somebody, odds are if they continue to stay sober, they're going to sponsor people and so on and so forth. You know, they're going to make amends and make right these relationships that they had damaged in their life. And you know, as a result of working these steps in my life, you know, a year and a half ago, I was able to move. We'll backtrack. I've got 5 minutes. So actually, yeah, we'll talk more. You know, it's not like that I can pay rent and live comfortably and take all these vacations. That's not a promise for me. You know, the promise is that when I am short and don't know if I'm gonna have enough money to do so and so, i.e. pay rent or eat, I'm not like running around looking for ways to get money, because like it's I'm safe and protected. You know, I found out that financial insecurity is a worldly clamor that I need not be interested in. You know, and that's like something, because like a year and a half ago I lived in Florida. I didn't know what rent was. I still don't know what a phone bill is. I didn't know what like a gas, like I had never paid for gas for my own car. You know, I basically was living, right off my parents. And when I moved here a year and a half ago, slowly but surely, I started weaning myself off of that. And I got a job. I'm employed. I'm employable, which is great. And you know, I'm able to actually, like the seventh tradition says, be self-supporting through my own contributions. And what that's given me is a sense of like financial freedom. I don't feel like I'm tethered to my parents, although it's always great that I go back, and I go back because I want to go back to South Florida and visit them like every month. And it's not because like they are paying my rent. You know, I'm going back because I want to see them. You know, one thing that I always mention is like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I found out that I was going to be an uncle after my brother and his ex had miscarried, because he was so embarrassed of me and he did not want me to be a part of his child's life. 3 years ago, when I made my amends to my brother, you know, the great thing is, you know, so my brother, him and I have not been able to live under the same roof for more than 2 days since I was 12. And, you know, like 3 years ago when I started working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, I started to repair that relationship. We would go bowling on Tuesdays before my organic class, and, you know, we would hang out. And then finally, when it came time to do the amends to him, right after I made the amends to him, he told me, before he told anybody else in the family, that him and his ex were pregnant again, and he did not know what to do. You know, like, he confided in me, like we could not live under the same roof whatsoever. Like, we would call the cops on each other because we would get in brawls, like, all-out brawls. Like, my teeth are, like, jacked because of him. He's a big dude. And, you know, when he's opening up to me, not knowing what to do and asking for my own direction, you know, that's my higher power working in my life. You know, fast forward to like 2 years ago when he presents me with a medallion, and he asked me to be the godfather to his only child. That's not me. You know, this program has given me so many things in my life. You know, the fact that I'm responsible, that I'm able to be there for people. I remember like one of the things I did in the county that I grew up in, was I was asked to be like, I guess like the DARE equivalent, but like, you know, an alcoholic in recovery. I was able to go to K-12 schools and, bring in, not like a meeting, but like basically tell these children like the repercussions of drinking alcohol and doing drugs. You know, the county that so many times locked me up, trusted me enough to be in these schools and talk to youth of Palm Beach County, you know, to hopefully inspire a message of not, you know, not doing that, pledging not to do that. you know, this program, like, I owe everything to this program, and had it not been for just working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor, I wouldn't be where I am today. And with that, I'd like to thank you.